This next segment is one of my favorites from today's list because it covers stories that are ostensibly about old technology, but actually reveal something important about how technical culture thinks about constraints and efficiency. We've got the Zilog Z80 turning 50, static search trees that outperform binary search by a factor of 40, SQLite production learnings, and two pieces about reviving old hardware and building open-source reading devices.
Let's start with the Z80 because it's genuinely a remarkable milestone. The Zilog Z80 was introduced in 1976, and it became one of the most widely deployed microprocessors in history, powering the TRS-80, the ZX Spectrum, the Amstrad CPC, and literally thousands of embedded systems across industrial, medical, and consumer applications. 50 years later, the Z80 instruction set architecture is still in production in various forms, still running in embedded systems that haven't been replaced, and still being studied by computer science students learning about CPU design.
What the HN community finds worth celebrating about the Z80 anniversary isn't nostalgia exactly. It's more about what the Z80 represents architecturally. Federico Fagin and Masatoshi Shima, who had worked on the Intel 8080, designed the Z80 with a philosophy of doing more with less. The instruction set was designed to be more complete than the 8080, with additional registers and instructions, while remaining compatible with 8080 code. The Z80 was genuinely innovative in its use of interrupt handling, its memory refresh mechanism for DRAM, and its relatively rich instruction set for a chip manufactured at 3.5 micron process geometry.
The contrast with modern chip design is instructive. A Z80 at 2.5 megahertz could execute roughly 1 to 2 million instructions per second. A modern CPU core executes billions. But the Z80 was comprehensible. A skilled engineer could hold the entire architecture in their head, understand every instruction, and reason about exactly what the hardware was doing at every clock cycle. That kind of transparency is essentially impossible with modern out-of-order superscalar processors. The HN discussion around the Z80 anniversary has a lot of reflection on this trade-off, raw performance versus architectural legibility.
And this connects directly to the Arch Linux on a 15-year-old netbook story, which is another HN perennial, someone taking hardware that the market has abandoned and making it productive. The author managed to get a functional Arch Linux installation running on a machine with probably 1 to 2 gigabytes of RAM and a dual-core Atom processor, and the resulting post is part technical guide and part meditation on what usefulness means for a computing device. It's a genuinely good read.
The Static Search Trees paper, technically a 2024 post that's resurging on HN, is the most technically dense piece in this group, but arguably the most consequential practically. Binary search on a sorted array is one of those foundational algorithms that most programmers learn and never question. It's optimal in terms of comparisons. You need at most log base 2 of n comparisons to find an element. But comparisons aren't the bottleneck on modern hardware. Cache behavior is. Binary search has poor cache locality because it jumps around the array in a pattern that doesn't align with how CPU prefetchers work.
So what's the insight behind static search trees?
The insight is to lay out the sorted data in a structure that's physically organized the way a CPU cache wants to access it, specifically using a B-tree-like layout in memory that stores nodes in cache line-aligned blocks. When you search this structure, you access memory in patterns that the hardware prefetcher can anticipate, dramatically reducing the number of actual memory fetches. The benchmark result of 40 times faster than naive binary search on large datasets is striking. But the nuance is that this advantage only materializes for datasets that don't fit in cache, roughly speaking, arrays larger than a few megabytes. For small in-cache datasets, binary search is fine. But for database index lookups, large in-memory datasets, or anything where the working set exceeds L3 cache, the performance difference is very real.
The SQLite story from Julia Evans is a natural complement here. Julia's blog is consistently excellent at making infrastructure concepts accessible without oversimplifying them, and her SQLite piece covers specific operational lessons. What happens when you run SQLite in high concurrency scenarios? How WoW mode changes the behavior of concurrent readers and writers? and where SQLite's single writer limitation actually creates bottlenecks in production versus where it doesn't. The HN community has been annotating it with their own production experiences, which is where a lot of the real value is.
The open book touch is worth highlighting because it sits at an interesting intersection of open hardware, reading culture, and practical electronics. It's an open source e-reader running on a custom board with an e-ink display, and it's currently on CrowdSupply seeking funding. The project philosophy is that you should be able to fully understand and modify your reading device, an explicit pushback against the locked-down firmware ecosystems of Kindle and Kobo. For the HN crowd, which skews strongly toward both avid reading and open source values, this hits a genuine need.
And the Stencil 3D printable solder paste stencil generator belongs in this segment because it represents the same kind of practical ingenuity. Someone built a web tool that generates custom solder paste stencils based on your PCB design, designed to be printed on a consumer 3D printer rather than requiring expensive laser-cut metal stencils. It's a small tool with a clear use case, and the HN comments have been constructively exploring the tolerance limitations of 3D printed stencils versus metal ones.